to the 145th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney and I'm your host. Welcome. I am a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete down here in Southwest Florida. And if you haven't listened before, welcome. If you have been listening, you'll know that we've been doing Timmery Hagenberger and I have been doing a series called Excusitarians, just some things that get in the way of maybe becoming fully plant-based. And today we're on excuse number 9, and it's basically can't eat well because there is no time. And if you haven't met Timmery before, she's the nutrition professor on, Mutra professor, I guess, on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and check out her website. The show notes will link her name and her website. She is a nutrition professor at Consumnes River College, and she will also be joining me and Addie and T. Colin Campbell March 24th at the 3rd annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference, and those tickets are available currently on eventbrite.com. And what we're doing this year, in addition to the day-long conference with speakers and cooking demonstrations and breakfast and lunch, we're actually adding Friday onto that, where people will have an opportunity to have one-on-one consults with Timmery or Addie or myself for an hour and go over their nutrition, their health, whatever you want to talk about for that hour. And so those tickets are available on the Eventbrite site as well. And we're also going to offer 2 yoga classes that Friday. So it'll be, we're stretching it in and slowly making a weekend of it. So welcome, Timmery.
Thank you. I can't wait for March. It's going to be here before we know it.
Yes, I know. It was just Thanksgiving and now Christmas is over. And, you know, it's just hang on. It's a fast, quick ride.
Oh, it is. Time, I think it's between Halloween to New Year's is just a flash, and people often in that time are so busy taking care of everyone and everything that it's very easy to bow to the idea of convenience, and a lot of people resort to getting takeout, you know, when things are super busy, and it's an easy excuse because we are busy. And it seems like we're just getting busier and busier, even though we have more and more access to technology that's supposed to save us time. We end up just getting busier and busier. So I want to talk about that with you today and to really figure out if this is serving us. You know, this idea that, well, it'll, you know, this will save me time, or this is, it's not what I would like to do, but in the name of convenience, we just have to get through the holidays and then we'll get back to normal. Or, you know, then once we start the new year, then we will, you know, start thinking about making the better choices for our health.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, certainly when people are out shopping, although people do more and more online shopping, you know, it's certainly when people are out already, they tend to grab stuff or I'm too tired. And I was actually speaking with Dr. Esselstyn this week about a patient that's cholesterol went down and then it went way back up. And he asked me, how many times does she eat out a week? And I answered very quick, well, I think she probably eats out a couple times a week. And he quickly did the math and it's like, well, if you eat 2 times a week and there's 52 weeks in a year, that's a lot of times eating out, exposing yourself to oil and salt and a lot of bad foods that we tend to make poor choices when you eat out. So even those couple of times where we think, oh, that's not bad, you can really get yourself in trouble, especially when it comes to lowering your cholesterol or dropping weight or getting things under, because you lose all control when you're eating out. So I thought that was interesting.
It is, and especially when you start to think about, well, we had had a birthday, and so you don't even think about that really. Oh yeah, that was that lunch, and then oh, my cousin's in town, and so yeah, well, she only comes in town once a year, and so we went out for that, and then all these little exceptions, you know, become the norm, and it seems like more so around the holidays. And a lot of people have work parties that have food associated, you know, with them. And some have a price, you know, they have to pay for, you know, quite an expensive meal if they participate. And so they may feel like, well, I need to get my money's worth if I'm going to be, you know, eating or paying for this food. And so all those little exceptions end up, you know, like you said, Dr. Esselstyn, they end up adding up quickly. And if the portion's too big and you end up taking it home, then that's two meals because you ate out and then you have the leftovers. So it can easily get into affecting your health. And you know, and I know that it doesn't, you know, perfection is not the goal, but it, as Dr. Clapper had mentioned when we were together at last year's conference, that your body is never not looking. So every time you eat something, it's changing your body. It's giving your cells information. And so your body doesn't necessarily say, oh, well, yeah, no, this isn't, you know, a really infrequent thing. Your cousin's only here, you know, once a year. No, your body, your cells are going to react negatively to those, you know, constituents, the saturated fat or the extra salt or whatever, immediately. And so those little cells are paying the price. And then they don't rationalize very well at all. They just respond.
No, and, you know, just like if you get stung with a bee and you have an allergic reaction, you get hives. And it takes a couple days for those hives to go away because your immune system got fired up to that foreign invasion. So when you eat dairy, you just have that one meal that had dairy, your immune system can get fired up and all those things like psoriasis and joint pains and all the other side effects can get fired up for a couple days. And so every time you do that, and then of course our gut bacteria, once you take away the fiber for a day, then you're letting the bad gut bacteria win a little bit more. So if you're fighting that battle to get things back in line, then it's a setback, you know. So those things are a series of setbacks, which can be not only demoralizing for your body, but it also, you know, physically, but mentally too. It becomes, you know, why do I even bother? Because, you know, I can't make any headway.
Well, and the hardest part is that if we got hives when we ate crummy, it would be much easier because we'd have that instant response. But we don't get a message in our brain, oh, you've disrupted the microbiome. You have turned on your immune system. We don't get those responses. And as we talked about in the past as well, we don't have nerve receptors inside our blood vessels. So we don't feel that, oh, here comes the sludge of that saturated fat. We don't writhe in pain when that happens. So we don't have that feedback loop. So it's easy to say, well, down the hatch. And then, you know, even if we do feel crummy afterwards, it's usually easier for us to keep that disassociated than if we ate something and it immediately burned our tongue or caused us to start itching or had our throat swell. There aren't too many people out there that say, oh, I just love the beginnings of an anaphylactic response when I consume peanuts. I just like to play with that every once in a while. Yes. No one does that, right? They're so scared. They've got their EpiPen. They're letting everybody know, no peanuts in my vicinity, because they don't like, of course, that response. But those, you know, other responses that you described are dangerous, but we don't have that feedback. So it makes it a little more challenging.
So you have an example for us today, a student that you want to talk about.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about one of my students, and she, Marisha, is a she is the daughter of a woman who has four kids. So she has three other siblings, and her mom was a single parent. And it's interesting because she said that not only was her mom amazingly busy. And, you know, as an adult now, she looks back and thinks, how in the world did my mom do everything? Because she worked and she, you know, took care of all of us. And she said she can remember a lot of times when her mom cooked at home. But then she also remembers that when things got super busy, especially around the holidays, then they would get takeout. And so she said, especially if her mom, you know, had a full day of work and then had errands to do, then she said she'd order a pizza or she'd pick up wings and fries on the way home. And she said, it, you know, we didn't think that the food was good for us, but we actually looked at it more as our time to relax together. But she said now, in hindsight, when she looked back, she sees that the good, positive feelings that she associates with that was about the intentional time together. It wasn't necessarily about the food, but that link, you know, was created. So when they decided as a family to adopt the plant-based, you know, kind of eating pattern, then she said they were a little worried about whether they would still be able to, you know, have that connection and that they would just kind of be left feeling a little bit empty. And, of course, that she wouldn't, her mom couldn't imagine how much extra time it would take. So what really was interesting that, go ahead.
No, you could. No.
Okay. What was really interesting that she came out of this was she said we were actually able to strengthen our emotional and physical connections by eating in a different way because we realized that we could help each other make a positive impact in each other's lives. And she said we were kind of stuck there. And then we realized, wow, if we make these choices, it'll not only help us in the present time, but we love each other and we want more future memories. And no one wants those memories to be in a hospital waiting room or, you know, worse, you know, at funerals. And so it was like, wow, not only are we helping ourselves, but we're helping each other and they're making an investment in each other's, you know, future health as well as current. So she had several strategies, and I want to get to those in a minute. But I want to delve a little bit deeper into this idea of the price for convenience, because that's something that all of my students, including Marisha and her family, were really sold on. You know, they knew that they were compromising health, but they really felt like the convenient way made sense. But I think that there's three ways that we pay for convenience. And the first way, but it's actually the most abstract and something that we've just discussed, is we pay with our long-term health. And the hard part is it's easy to miss this because we always think that we're going to be the exception to the rule. You know, no one, as many of the doctors have said, including Esselstyn, you don't plan to go out to dinner just on purpose to destroy the endothelial lining of, you know, your blood vessels. That's not your goal. Are you still there?
I am.
Okay. I thought it looked like you were calling me back. So she said we think we're going to be the exception to the rule. But when we look around and we see that more than 70% of the U.S. population is, you know, overweight or obese, or you just look around at people that are like contemporaries, no matter what our age is, our peers, we realize how quickly our lives move. And before we know it, we're looking around and we're going to visit people in the hospital and we're going to more funerals. I've mentioned I have a student who has she calls it her funeral dress. She goes to so many funerals and she's in her mid-50s that she has a specific dress and she's like, oh, I have to wear the funeral dress again because she's, you know, people are really starting to pay the price of those, you know, poor decisions. And the problem with all of that is these aren't freak accidents. You know, these are the chronic diseases like the diabetes and the high blood pressure leading to stroke and heart disease that could have been mitigated or absolutely avoided. So, number one, long-term health, and you see that every day.
Yeah, I was just reflecting. We have a cath lab technician that in his 50s had to have a bypass, and he ate very poorly, and most of the people in the cath lab that work there eat very poorly because of whatever, you know, excuse you can use. But I, you know, when I think about him, I know that there's also that justification. We eat bad sometimes, but we don't eat as bad as other people. And I think that we have to watch out as your point of reference. So that, you know, you got to take that away as far as, you know, you can't say, well, I eat better than him, so I'll be okay. You know, so from where you start in your reality can also be a tripping point. You know, if because in a justification, so that's, you know, so that's something to look out for. Just because maybe you don't eat, you know, 3 meals a day, or you don't drink 8 Coca-Colas a day, then you just drink 1 Coca-Cola a day. What other things that it's associated with might also be as just as bad. And, you know, what I'm, you know, we're doing this Boston Heart profile, and it's been very, very interesting because we look at LP little a, we look at inflammatory markers. We look at ability to absorb cholesterol and ability to make cholesterol. And the combinations that we see with people that are at risk has been really amazing. You know, the people that have premature disease, did they have it because of more of a genetic marker, or did they have it more because of what they ate? And so we can, you know, what I'm seeing is a lot of people ate so poorly and they had high cholesterol. And when we change them to a plant-based diet, those marker, those, you know, their cholesterol comes way down because they didn't have a genetic marker per se, but it was, they were able to absorb cholesterol. So when they fed themselves bad stuff, they were really able to turn it into, you know, cholesterol and damaging things when they ate a high fat diet. But if they cleaned it up, they had the ability to really straighten things out. And, you know, and then on the other hand, there are some people that are genetically predisposed. You know, if you have a lot of, if you have a high LP little A, then it, you know, you have about a 20% worse cardiovascular risk than those that don't. But on the other hand, on the bright side, they're like hand grenades that you don't pull, you don't necessarily have to pull the pin. So if you don't oxidize and eat a bunch of animal protein and fat, then those markers don't have to be causing your problem. So you can be aware of them, but you don't have to act on them. So, you know, I think that, you know, that kind of all plays in together as far as your long-term health. So just because you may not eat as bad as somebody else does, doesn't mean that you're not going to have a different result.
Definitely. I mean, it makes me think I'm obviously raising kids 11 and 14, and that excuse that they will... My friends can do it. My friends don't have a curfew. My, you know, when you use them as a point of reference, then no. We have different rules in the house, right? But they can always find someone who, well, they have, you know, I have, my son has a friend who, his parents got him an iPhone X for Christmas. $1,000 cell phone. That cannot be the example that cannot be the frame of reference for Christmas presents, but you can always find someone who's in, you know, a worse quote unquote situation that you can use to justify, you know, your current reality. But it, like you said, it's just doing harm to yourself, and it's keeping you stuck in this excusitarian situation, which is not serving you. With your mention of the Boston program, that it makes me think of Eating You Alive with Penn for Penn and Teller. Do you remember how he was saying, wait, is this fat person drug or is this genetic drugs? You know, I thought that you said that it was my genes, you know, that was impacting my cholesterol and my high blood pressure. But now you're telling me if I change my diet, I won't need those drugs. And, you know, that stuck with me so much because it's true. It's just because, you know, whether you have the genetic markers or not, your decisions shouldn't be impacted by that, because in both scenarios, you're doing yourself much, much, much service to act as if you want those genes not expressed, you know, to keep those suppressed, or to not, you know, to not add insult to injury. So, yes, we know that no matter the scenario, whether you have the genes or not, your actions can significantly impact the health of every one of your cells. And that leads into the second way that we pay for convenience, and that is much easier to grasp, because that is immediate happiness and health. So I know that you have lots of stories along these lines, but when my students tell me about their experience in class or the 21-day kickstart that they do, they are often surprised by their energy boost. That's the first thing that changes. You know, they say, I just can't believe it. And they often will also tell me, in my head, I just feel better. You know, a lot of my students come from high school and they've been on ADHD meds, often depressed. And so a lot of them try to wean themselves off some of those medications as they're now starting college and are really struggling. And so their mental health seems to be much more something that they're much more aware of than maybe even in the past. And so they'll tell me, I just feel better. And I don't even know. I just feel like a better person inside. And then I'll always ask too, well, how do you feel when you eat, you know, these crummy food choices? And they'll say, well, no, we don't feel good at all. And so that's an immediate, you know, experience that they relay to me. And I'm sure you have lots of patients too. Any of them come to mind?
Well, yeah, the joint. I had a lady in here yesterday, and she has lost 25 pounds. Her and her husband have adopted a plant-based diet, and she said, you know, she's going to do a warrior dash with her son, and she said, you know, I started running a little bit, and she said, I was really surprised. She said, my joints don't hurt, my feet don't ache. She said, I got up before, and things ached, and I hobbled around. She said, I'm not having it now, you know. So that was cool, and
I would think, I know I've asked my mom and her friends, you know, what's the issue that they would say is most significant, and they all talk about arthritis. They all talk about exactly what you mentioned, that getting up and just feeling achy and creaky, and it just, I would imagine, I'm thankful, I mean, we've all had little injuries here and there, you know, where an ankle's sore because you rolled it or something, and that kind of toothache feeling where it's always there and it's always bothering you, to think about facing every day trying to will yourself to do exercise when your joints are in, you know, much inflammation and much pain, and not even reserving that now for the older, you know, generation, but a lot of these athletes that have done, you know, maybe broken fingers and, you know, different bones and really stressed their, even just their tendons and ligaments, and then to have so many of those protein powders, dairy-based, you know, and this ridiculous trend for chocolate milk as a recovery, you know, adding all of that to it and then wondering why they're in such pain, you know, with their joints, it's no wonder.
So number three.
So number three is, first thing people think of with convenience is time saving, but I would argue that we often pay for convenience with our time. And it's, I think the idea of, oh, grabbing a quick bite out, you know, is really going to be quick. But I can't tell you how many times I have regretted that, you know, even if it's something, quote unquote, that's, you know, a good choice, I've regretted doing it because it ended up taking longer. you know, nothing, it just really doesn't seem like there's anything quicker than opening up, you know, a can of beans, rinsing them, adding some mixed greens, salsa, sprinkle of, you know, pepitas or the pumpkin seeds, and then whipping up some kind of quick, you know, dressing. I'll often, if I don't, even if I don't have time to open a can of beans, I'll take some frozen peas and frozen corn and sprinkle those, you know, on top of my mix of veggies. But even going to the supermarket deli area, which is typically, you know, obviously a better choice, or the supermarket in general is a better choice than going out. But just navigating to get to the right section and then not being distracted by all the end cap sales and the samples and, you know, people you meet halfway, you know, down the aisles. And then trying to identify the best of the worst, right? So you're like, okay, I'm going to try for a salad. So you look at all these pre-made salads, and they, so many of them have some kind of cheese and cold cut type meat chunks and things like that in it. And so you find one maybe that looks decent, and then it has a dressing. And what does the dressing have in it? Tons of oil and, you know, salt and all kinds of other ingredients that you probably can't, you know, even pronounce. And I know there's a trend with the salad bars where you're doing the, you know, salads by weight. And those can be enticing, and a lot of places have now vegan options and plant-based options that are clearly marked. But because they have to sit there typically for so long, they often are just full of oil, you know, so you end up doing, you know, a big, big scoop of oil, and it adds up fast, and it can, all of a sudden, you can look down at this little paper box full of a couple scoops of this and a couple scoops of that, and it can be $20, you know, for an option like that. Now, there's obviously nothing wrong with going into the produce section, grabbing a couple apples, grabbing a couple bananas, you know, maybe into the bulk section and a small amount of nuts or something like that if you're really pressed for time. But that idea of eating out, even at the supermarket when you're doing a lot of the pre-made stuff, is something that can, it can end up taking more time than just putting something together at home pretty quickly. And so those three ideas are, you know, really honing in on our two most valuable and precious resources, our health, which we can't buy health, and our time, which we can't get back our time. So I am ready to talk about some of the ways to set ourselves up for success.
Let's do it.
All right. So one of the things that is important to remember is we want to be honest with ourselves, and we've kind of touched on that, that idea of the reality check. But when it comes to being honest in this situation, I'm talking about thinking about your week ahead. And if your week is really crazy and you know that things are going to be, you know, long days, lots of travel, or just lots of errands running around, then being prepared is going, you know, to be a given. And so you're going to want to do those if-then statements, you know, those implementation intentions. So you know what's going to derail you, and you know that if you're going to try to do six errands and not eat anything and not bring anything with you, then when you drive by the fast food place, it's going to smell even better than it normally does. And so having something with you, knowing ahead, oh, I know I'm going to get hungry. I'm going to pack, you know, a hummus and vegetable wrap so that I have it with me, or I'm going to pack it, bring a little igloo cooler with me in the front seat, and I'm going to put some sliced up oranges and, you know, apples or what have you, I'm in there. But having something on the go and knowing, you know, or having food at home. So Marisha had said when she knows that there's food at home that will go bad if she doesn't eat it, I won't even consider going out, she says. And so that's just something that mentally she's like, I can't do that. I can't have food going bad and eating out, she said. And then in, you know, retrospect now, she said, I'm amazed at how much money I've saved by just remembering that. But it's easy to rationalize if you say, oh, there's nothing in the fridge. There's nothing at home. I have to eat out, you know. So she said that works that works really well for her.
Yeah, and I think it's really important, especially if you're going to go to the grocery store. Sometimes, you know, my weekend things get, you know, my typical schedule is, you know, I go for my long run on Saturday. You know, I come in and, you know, get changed and go to the hospital. And then I start doing errands, I'll, you know, go to the grocery, you know, usually the typical grocery store or whatever. And I can be out for 2 or 3 hours, but sometimes after I run, I'm not necessarily that hungry, or maybe I'll just have a quick smoothie, go shower up, and I'm kind of in between. I'm in that 11 o'clock range, so it's not quite the appropriate lunchtime, you know, and I'm going to go out before, but I know if I get out about an hour into it, I'm going to start getting really hungry. It's going to hit me, and then I'm going to be looking everywhere to find something to eat. So I almost always take that 10 or 15 minutes and grab some, and sit down and eat something before I go out, because I know that I'm going to be really tempted. And then, you know, and I'm one of these people, if I get to that point where I'm really starving, especially after, you know, a long run, and it hits me, then I kind of feel like I can't get full. So I don't want to get to that spot. So if I eat a little something that I'm, you know, kind of a tighter over, and then while I'm out, it's like, well, I'm going to get some fruit while I'm out here, and I might eat some fruit while I'm, you know, then I'm good.
Yeah, and just that little, I mean, you've been there before. You know how everybody knows how they respond. So just taking that time to think through and that little planning ahead, you know, the idea of being kind to your future self. You know, if you wait, you can, if you don't wait, you can catch yourself before those excuses come up. You know, the too hungry or too busy excuse, you know, rears its head. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And the idea that having the easiest options, also the ones that are best for you. And we've mentioned that before, that if you have a house full of convenient snack food that is not serving you, then you will continue to make those choices and blame willpower, and have it just really start to eat away at your integrity, because it's not in line with what you want for yourself. But if your easiest options, like you said, you know, you chop up some fruit, have it right there in a bowl, open the fridge, there it is. And because you know you're going to get hungry, or, you know, the wrap that you make, or you make the hummus and you put it in the freezer. Marisha has talked about the idea of having those basics. So they take time, you know, and they put those basics on autopilot. So every week they make either like an oatmeal or muesli. I have a great recipe on my website for that. But they'll make hummus. They'll make a couple dressings. They may, you know, make some muffins or some soups. And they'll use a crock pot, or, you know, they'll always use their freezer. So they have those pieces, and then, you know, they kind of take that foodie bar way approach where you have the different components, and then you make different combinations of ingredients and change things up, you know, throughout the week. But knowing ahead of time that those staples are there, you know, just makes it a lot easier.
Okay, number two.
So saving, so Marisha's mom, it was interesting because she had it in her mind that this way of eating was going to be more expensive and was going to be more time consuming. And she said that it really surprised her, but it saved time. That, you know, she didn't have to worry about defrosting meat or, you know, making sure it had this, you know, extended cooking times to reduce, you know, food poisoning. And they were also blown away by how much quicker the dishes cleaned up without the oil, the meat, and the dairy. And that's a huge bonus. I have, you know, when I talk about that in my cooking class, that, you know, it's amazing how much easier everybody has spent time trying to get, you know, the cheesy, oily residue off of a pan that was used for enchiladas, you know, the traditional enchiladas or lasagna, and you try to soak it, and then it's a mess. And when you don't have to worry about that, things just really rinse off really quickly.
And food lasts longer, so you don't have to worry about it going bad. So meat is going to go bad in 2 or 3 days or something like that. It's going to spoil the whole dish, where the vegetables, you know, they're going to last. You can, you know, get several days out of them.
Definitely. And they also, the next is that she said that they ended up saving money. You know, they didn't think that it would. They thought, oh, I'm going to have to be buying all these, you know, new expensive, you know, foods. And then they realized, wait a sec, you know, the staples here that we're making every week, these are not expensive. And what we had been spending all the money on was the meat and the cheese. And I have several students who work at grocery stores, and, you know, and people will say, oh, I know, I it's just too expensive to eat healthy. And they say, well, do you look at what, you know, we're scanning, look where all of the money is being spent. It's not in the beans and the rice and the fruits and the vegetables. You know, rarely, if you go out of season, you may be paying a lot for fresh blueberries, but as we, you know that frozen blueberries and frozen berries and frozen fruit is going to be typically an excellent choice because it was picked, you know, when it was super ripe, and it can, you know, the way that our distribution, food distribution system works, that it can be cost efficient, you know, for us. So that's just a myth that we've talked about before, but it's amazing how it continues to be perpetuated. And I think part of that's just the marketing of fast food, you know, making it, oh, this is cheap, and, you know, it's only the dollar menu. Well, nobody spends a dollar on the dollar menu. You know, when they add up, I think the average fast food receipt is $8. So no one's spending, you know, 49 cents to get there. Their fourth meal.
Yeah, I was, you know, doing some of my holiday shopping, and because I give the grocery store tours, I know a lot of the checkout people, and I was talking to them, and I checked out, you know, I had my grocery cart filled to the brim, and, but it was, you know, it was like less than $120. And I was like, do you notice? I said, how many people get this many things for $120? I asked her, because I look around at other people checking out, and their bill is as much or more than mine, but they don't have half the food that, you know, I was buying groceries basically to feed 14 people. And, you know, so I, you know, for a couple different, you know, a couple days. And, you know, I was still, you know, well in that mark because I wasn't buying, you know, all the prepared type of things.
Definitely. And when you buy kale chips for, you know, $5.99 for a 2-ounce package, then, yeah, you're obviously spending money for that. But when you make them, you know, that's one of those recipes in the book that, you know, you make them and you're spending $1.98 for the kale that will fill 2 to 3 cookie sheets full, you know, and it just, you know, there's no comparison when you look at the nutrients, you know, you're getting obviously per bite, are, you know, very, very high. And then, the last thing I want to revisit about this is that idea that any time of year, but especially the holidays, the holidays are not supposed to be about running ourselves into the ground. And I know growing up, my mom always got sick right after Christmas. You know, it's like she held it together and just push, and then she'd get sick after Christmas. And it's easy for us to fall into that, especially moms, you know, that kind of you know, position in the family, it's really easy to fall into that kind of martyr, you know, idea, that identity. And it's not, if we think back, pull back a little bit and think, okay, this is not what I want to model for my family. We're not teaching useful, you know, skills in this scenario. So the other thing that I want to think about is that the holidays are also not about eating as much rich food as possible and feeling the full brunt of the post-meal or snack guilt. You're like, oh, I know, I ate so much, now I'm, you know, I gained weight, or they end up in your care again because their blood pressure has just gone through the roof, or, you know, they've had some kind of an episode, and so then they need to be on your cap table, you know, or something, you know, even more severe. And so when we think about again, what are the holidays supposed to be about, and that if we can make that investment in each other's well-being, and we can connect and actually make it fun. So, you know, people say, well, exercise, yeah, how could you make that fun? Well, you can be outside, you know, and that adds, obviously, a nice dynamic. You can be listening to something that you enjoy, whether that be a podcast or whether that be a book. You can have friends, you know, that you meet for exercise if that's something that you enjoy doing socially. So if we flip that around and think, how can we do that in the kitchen, then what's wrong with putting on a podcast when you're in the kitchen, or your favorite music, or inviting those people that you love into the kitchen and working together so that everybody's enjoying that time and you're also being productive. And then it makes sense that everybody connects on an emotional level as well.
Yep. Nope. I think it's it can be a good time. Addie and I actually we actually made holiday treats together via Skype because she couldn't come in for the holidays. So we decided our tradition is usually we're in the kitchen and we have a big party on Christmas Eve, and she and I are usually in the kitchen cooking together all day long. So we did it just with a little Skype. So she wasn't quite there, but pretty close. So it worked out, and you know, we still had our time together. So that was good, and it made it much more pleasant and for me, and I wasn't alone doing it. And of course, I drug Mr. Michael into the scene, and he became my new sous chef. I didn't get the opportunity to have Nathan as my sous chef. But, you know, he got on the phone and, you know, he wanted to make sure I was doing julienning the vegetables for the vegetable trade just right. So it was, we had a good time, even though we weren't together.
Yeah, it's amazing how spending time on FaceTime or Skype, it just changes everything. I mean, it's wonderful to be able to talk on the phone, but adding that visual dynamic, it really does feel like it's a much stronger connection. So, yes, people often forget about that, that they can be together even when they're far away. And even with exercise, walking, I like to talk to my sister on the phone sometimes when we love to walk together, but there's 2 hours of driving in between us. And so, but putting on, you know, earbuds and starting to talk while we walk, we can do that virtually as well.
Yeah, and, you know, I grew up, and I have very fond memories of cooking with my grandmother. And, you know, so those, it wasn't so much about what we made, it was that we were together making things. And you can't go through you don't remember going through drive-in windows together or picking up fast foods together. You know what I mean? So that time in the kitchen where, and something always happens that's funny or, you know, this stressful or whatever. And, you know, even with Addie and I over the years, you know, I try to get too many things going. And, you know, there'll be a meltdown or two, you know, in the kitchen. But we have that, you know, it's a memory. And, you know, it may have been a meltdown that day, but it becomes a funny memory to laugh about, you know, the next year, or, you know, what's going to happen next, so to speak, you know, so our trials and tribulations. So I think it's a lot more fun to be in the kitchen as a family than it is to just grab prepared things, you know. And, you know, I often go back to my grandmother, but, you know, I think one of the most special bonds that I had with her was that she made things for us. She didn't go buy things for us, but she made things for us. And, you know, whether it was your favorite dinner, your favorite birthday cake, or at Christmas, you know, Easter time, she made, you know, special things for each, you know, each grandkid. You got the different things on your birthday that was the special for you. So it was the care of actually having something homemade is always better than buying things. So, I think it's, you know, and it's even better when you go to potluck. You know, and we did the potluck with the membership before Christmas, and everybody brought a dish. And like you and I were talking before, 50% of the people there had not been plant-based a year ago, and they were. So it was all new. So they were all stressed a little bit to bring a covered dish that was new to them. vegetable dish to the, you know, to the potluck for other people to eat. They wanted people to enjoy it and like it, and people did, and they got positive feedback, and they shared their food with other people, and they had a marvelous time. I mean, everybody wanted to do it again. So we're going to plan to do it again in the springtime. But it was, you know, no one knew each other beforehand. So it was a group of strangers that came together to learn about plant-based nutrition, who now, you know, cooked meals that they were uncomfortable with, or foods that they were uncomfortable with, and learned and enjoyed it. You know, so those are just great memories that, you know, that they'll have. And a great set of confidence, too, that, you know, hey, I made this. I brought this dish that I've never made before to this group, and they enjoyed it, and I got positive feedback and support, and that gives you a little bit more confidence to try it again for somebody else, you know. So I can't, you know, it's just, and it didn't cost anybody, you know. I mean, it wasn't like everybody had to shell out $50 to go eat and wait on a meal and wait, you know, on a bad meal. It was a small investment to have a nice meal that you could sit around and talk. And we were at our local beach complex, and we watched the sunset together. And so, I mean, just a nice time. So there's so much more, there's so many more memories and good things that come out of eating and making things together than it does than just, you know, hurrying and running through a fast food just because of convenience or just because of a perceived cost. So I think if there's one takeaway that probably, you know, if I had to say, you know, or highlight it, is, you know, maybe this next 2018, spend just maybe even if it's only perceived, but a little bit more time on this stuff, slow things down a little bit, and it'll be much more memorable.
Absolutely. My students, my Thrive on Plants Club students, they love the potlucks, we do that. Top into the potlucks, and I love it when they go out of their comfort zone and they say, I don't know if this is going to taste good. I don't know. I'm not making any promises. And I always giggle and say, perfect, because we will help. You know, if it doesn't taste exactly the way that you want it, that we're here to help each other and say, oh, well, you know, maybe it could have been a little overcooked or undercooked, or yeah, it needs some more garlic or what have you. That it's not a personal, success or failure. It's looking at all of this with a sense of wonder and experimentation. I wonder what this will taste like. I wonder how we could do it. And I think that it may hold some people back, you know, feeling like, well, if everybody isn't going to love it, I don't know what I'm going to do. Well, how often do we go out and eat a meal that is less than our expectations? Often,
yes.
Right? I mean, rarely do we go out and say, whoa, that just blew me away. I actually can't give you too many examples at all, you know, short of Millennium, in Oakland. But, I mean, there are very few situations where I come home and my husband knows exactly what I say is, oh, I could have made that at home for cheaper and it would have been better.
Yeah.
And it isn't that I'm all that in the kitchen. It's just that our bar is set pretty darn low when we eat out, but for some reason when we're at home, you know, this idea that it has to be perfect or it has to be, you know, fantastic. No, it can be simple. And, you know, what you were saying too, you know, rings true. I think it does. It might hold people back, you know, if they want to cook with their family, but they didn't grow up cooking this way. You know, a lot of your patients are in their 70s and 80s and their whole life cooked a certain way, and now they're changing in, you know, only 4 or 5 months. And so how is their confidence level going to be with their own family? They're already having to answer all these questions and what are you doing and all of this. And then to risk, you know, putting themselves out there by making a dish, if they come at it more of, you know, even approaching a grandchild and saying, Grammy or, you know, Papa, we're trying to make, you know, do this, and we don't think that we can do it on our own, and we don't know how it's going to come out. Would you help us? We're going to need to experiment, kind of like a science experiment in the kitchen. Would you be willing to be a taste tester and, you know, help us through this process? That's a completely different, mentality than going at it as, well, I made this, and I don't think it's going to taste very good. I know it's not what we normally eat, but it's good for us. that's not gonna get any votes.
So I'm gonna
but,
yeah. So I think the other thing that I would like to perhaps allude to is I listened to a podcast with Tim Ferriss, and one of the things he alludes to that I think that we can actually apply to this is how do I make it a little easier, and how do I make it a little bit more fun? So maybe not, so sometimes, simple foods are easier, simple fruits and vegetables, just cut up and make it easier. And again, how to make it fun. So involve your family and think of it as fun, not as, let's don't think of it as torture, painful, changing, healthy. Let's just say we're going to have fun. And
right.
If you think you're going to have fun, you know what? Usually you do.
Yeah, you do. And, as we even talked about in this, in this podcast, this episode, turning on music that you guys like and, just making it a fun adventure. If there's something you want to watch or, something, just make it intentional that you're doing this and that you're looking for the fun in it. Because that's how you get a sustainable habit. Is it something that you are intentionally paying attention to the benefits? And so if you're getting benefits immediately in the process because you're enjoying yourself and you're feeling better because you're eating food that loves you back and you're saving money and all the other benefits that we've talked about, then it's a natural progression into sustainability.
All right. Well, I think we're going to be started in a good 2018. So we'll have one more excuse to cover, and then we'll start focusing on the conference in March. We'll be here before you know it. So I look forward to seeing you and your family again. And it's been great having you on.
Thank you. Thank you. I can't wait to finish out this series. We're going to do FOMO. Fear of missing out. That's our last one.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Timmy.
Take care.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode with Timmy. Again, this was Don't Have Time to Eat Well, so I hope you enjoyed it. Again, look for Timmy at her website. Check out her book on Amazon, The Foodie Bar Way. She's the Nutra Professor on Twitter. She's pretty active there. She's on Facebook. So look her up. Check out her wonderful website, The Nutrition Professor. She has a lot of great recipes there. And again, the book is fabulous as far as the different recipes and great ideas for sauces is something that trips people up a lot, or just family meals. I wanted to tell you about a special thing that we're doing here the first part of the year, and we'll see how it goes. But we're going to offer, as you may know, we have online courses as well as the in-house membership program. So we have a level one and a level two online course. The level one is meant to be an introductory course to the practice with webinars, free website content, Facebook private page, and a consult with Addie Meinerich, our registered dietitian. What we're going to do, for people that maybe don't know just how much help they need or they're not sure of how much if they don't want to commit to a membership type program, we're offering a consult with Addie for a level one, just a one-time consult. So you can call and talk to her for 15 minutes and decide what you'd like in level one. So to kind of do, make your own program, so to speak. And then if you just want to do an hour consult with her, we can start off there. If you decide you want to have more dietary consults with Addie, we can go from there. And then if you want to go ahead and step it up a little bit to have some more free content or to have some more included content from the website with the webinars and the emails, then you can step it up there. And then ultimately, if you wanted to go on to level two, it's where I come in and talk to you once or twice a month. And Addie will talk to you twice a month, and we can get you on a plan to get you off your medications, to get you in better health, optimize your wellness. And then, of course, we always have the membership program that's here at the office, but we also do it online. So we have full online members And we talk to them as much as they need, available for them 24/7, just like for our patients here in town. So you have my phone number and my email, and you can talk to me as much as you want and talk to Addie, and you know, we can get you squared away on, again, being the best that you can be for the journey you're on to achieve your optimal health and wellness. So I look forward to hearing from you. You can check out all those things on the website at drdelaney.com. You can email us at info@drdelaney.com. It's DocTorDulaney. Feel free to call the office. The number's on the website. It's 941-235-9231, and we can help you there, talk to you, and do whatever we can to help you start 2018 with, you know, all the help that you need to become the healthiest you can be. So thank you for taking time to listen. We have a lot of great interviews coming up in the new year. Addie and I will be doing a series on, you know, problems in the office or people with particular problems. So we'll try to address any topic that you'd like to send us as well. So you can email me with topics that you like. We've had some that we're going to address here in the near future. So thank you again for listening, and I look forward to hearing from you next week.